Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped. For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation too to those ancestors, because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diaspora, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors, because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to them, because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors, because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank, and they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
It's all yours, Brother Kwame.
Hey, Hotep family. Hotep. Thanks, Dr. Rogers. Hotep family, this is your brother, Kwazi Kraft, Shuja Kawatu, your warrior for the people. Back with you again this Thursday night. Again, this is a call-in format. I do have a caller on the line. I'm just going to ask you to just keep your phones muted until we open up the lines for conversation. That way we don't get any interference. Now, tonight's program, we're going to be talking about why should the black man follow the teachings of the late Elijah Muhammad. And I bring that up after reading some of the books that he wrote, Message to the Black Man in America. And again, that's by the late Mr. Elijah Muhammad. I'm hearing some background noise, so I don't know if somebody might either muted their mic or something like that. So you can mute your mic and you don't have to worry about that. But so that's going to be the conversation today. And one of the reasons I kind of brought that conversation up, I wanted to talk about that, is because I've heard so much negativity in regards to some of the talk of the Nation of Islam. And when I say that, I mean, you know, they say, you know, the Minister Louis Farrakhan was barred from Facebook because they said he was promoting hate. But I just don't recall any hate other than just telling the truth about a lot of things that's going on. But again, a lot of people would talk about him as he's some type of hate monger and so forth. And so there's just a lot of confusion. And I think a lot of it is from a lot of our own personal trauma. And I even had a lot of confusion about the Nation of Islam or the Truth of Islam, the followers of the teaching of the late, great Elijah Muhammad. And so I have one of my good brothers that's going to be on the show a little later, and I think he contacted a couple of his friends and so forth, and they're going to speak on that somewhat. And that's going to be Shion Andre Muhammad. I say Shion, you know, that's one of his titles he holds as a martial artist. And so I wanted to also kind of talk about those things and also mention the fact that, you know, they do not promote the use of guns for their personal safety and self-defense. And so I wanted to talk on that in regards to just how things are going on where, you know, we live in a country where we have more than one mass shooting a day. You know, we're averaging, 365 days in a year, and that's what we're at, and sometimes even more. And if we continue at this pace, you know, it's going to be more. So when you're talking about a people of the Muslim faith, and I know that there's different types, and again, I'm not going to expound on that. I have some other people that are going to come in and speak on that and just shed some light on the conversation. But one of the other things I wanted to talk about, since I did mention Shihan Andre Muhammad, because he teaches here in Milwaukee, and there's a great following from a number of different people from the things that they've learned. And one of the people we had, Grandmaster Charles Warren here out of Milwaukee that got the Kempo Gojo going, and tons of his students, and, you know, the late Mr. Sabir was one of his students, and he had a school in the Milwaukee area as well. And then we have just a lot of other disciples that are teaching, Sihan Saleem, Shihan Franklin, Mr. Teju, just so many others, just, you know. So, but anyway, I'm going to talk about Dr. Moses Powell. Dr. Moses F. Powell was born January 13th, 1941. And I talk about him because he was one of the greatest martial artists of all time, and he was, you know, a brother like us, and talk a little bit about his journey and what he went through. So again, Dr. Moses Powell, he's born January 13th, 1941, to Athena Powell. It was discovered during his late teen years that Dr. Moses Powell was a natural in anything that he set his heart and mind of achieving. Now, he excelled in the art of boxing and was easily handling more experienced boxers. Now, it was in Harlem, New York, that he met his martial arts instructor, Florindo Visconian, also known as Professor V. And I'm just going to say Professor V because I don't want to kill his last name. And at that time, in 1954, he was not known to the martial arts world, but that did not stop Dr. Moses Powell from becoming his student. Now, Dr. Moses Powell was fascinated by this funny but serious little man. And when we say little man, I think he was about maybe, you know, you heard about the late Bruce Lee. I think he's about his size, you know. So about 5'5", you know, 135 pounds, somewhere in that area. Now, this little man who had the ability, he had the ability to destroy opponents much bigger than himself. Dr. Moses Powell himself was a big man with a big heart, and he grew fond of his teacher, and they started the Jiu-Jitsu system. And so Dr. Moses Powell became so proficient at Grandmaster V's system of martial arts that as a green belt, he was allowed to instruct and teach third and fourth degree black belts. When he was ever asked how this could possibly be, Dr. Moses Powell would always reply, "That was because I did my homework and they didn't." And so, you know, you understand that being in the classroom from learning. And so in 1960, the sensei Moses Powell began teaching his own system of self-defense, and he named it his system Self-Defense Complete. Now, as his system evolved in 1964, he renamed it Modern Jiu-Jitsu. And in 1965, Sensei Moses Powell was selected to perform demonstrations along with other martial artists at the World's Fair held in New York, finally in 1968, after having presented the newly evolved system to his teacher and receiving his teacher's permission to proceed. Sensei Moses Powell renamed the fighting system of self-defense Jiu-Jitsu Sanukis Ru. And in 1965, a short black and white documentary was made about Sensei Moses Powell and his Sanukis Ru Jiu-Jitsu, and the film was called Sanukis. With the coming of the early 70s, Sensei Moses Powell began to travel and introduce his revolutionized version of Jiu-Jitsu to the people of Jamaica, Trinidad, Bermuda, Panama, Puerto Rico, and also Bahamas. And in 1971, Sensei Moses Powell became the first martial artist invited to perform at the United Nations in 1973. In the Benin Empire of West Africa, awarded him the International Benin Award for his community work and efforts throughout the world. Now, Sensei Moses Powell and his demo team was featured in the Panama Star newspaper in 1973, and after being invited to participate in a national martial arts demonstration sponsored by Panamium Beer Distributing Company, the performance was so overwhelming and well-received, the General Manuel Noriega prevented Sensei Moses Powell's plane from taking off and had a special military escort him to the general's home. The general wanted Sensei Moses Powell to consider an offer to be in charge of his military hand-to-hand combat training for the Panamanian National Guards. Now, in 1974, Sensei Moses Powell returned to Panama to demonstrate again after a superb demonstration in Madison Square Garden for the Aaron Banks Oriental World of Self-Defense. It was in New York City at the Felt Forum in Madison Square Garden before a sold-out audience of 20,000 that Sensei Moses Powell performed his now world-famous one-finger rollout in 1975. Now, he performed it again and again at the Aaron Banks Oriental World Self-Defense and was also featured in a full-length martial arts documentary film that was called Warrior Within. Now, the film was placed on the movie theaters all around the world, and it was during this time it was introduced to the world as Master. He was introduced to the world as Master Moses Powell. Now, Master Moses Powell also appeared in the movie Gordon's War. It was also during the time that in the early mid-70s that Master Moses Powell also established Senukis School in Atlanta Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, in Hartford, Connecticut, in various other places of New York. Master Moses Powell, also known as Musa Muhammad, had even established roots in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And during this time, with the help of his good friend from various Tango Togo of Brooklyn, New York, Sensei Ultiman Adux Salim. Now, in 1977, Master Moses Powell was inducted into the World Martial Arts Hall of Fame in 1979. Master Moses Powell, along with his wife, Janice Hardy Powell, left New York, relocated in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and a longtime student named Rex Lee had come to live in Florida prior to Master Moses Powell and his family moving there also. Now, two other students, Gino Alfarano and Veronica Walker, also left New York to join teacher Master Moses Powell. It was there in Fort Lauderdale that a new evolution of Senukis Rude Jinjutsu took place. And so they're also going to be having a tournament in the Milwaukee area. And that's going to be at the end of this month. And so we're going to want to get as many people there. And again, I don't have all that information, but I have someone that's going to be coming on forwarding that information to us. Moses Powell did okay, sorry about that. I don't know how that happened, but he did succumb to some illness January 22nd, 2005 in Palm Beach, Florida. And so, but he has a host of disciples that he has taught that is still teaching the system of Senukis all over the world. And he's made just an amazing impact on so many people. And so I'm trying to pick up and learn some of those skills. And again, there's going to be, I think his name is, I know him as Grandmaster Anthony Muhammad, but also has another name that he goes by. And again, my guest that comes on later on can fill us in with more of that information. And so again, tonight's topic, we're going to be talking about why should the black man follow the teachings of Elijah Muhammad? And when I say that, you know, again, I mentioned something earlier about the Honorable Louis Farrakhan and how he was banned from Facebook or in Facebook jail for a period of time. And I don't know if maybe they put them back. You know, they came up with these standards indicating that people that are not promoting positive things, that they're not going to let them on the social media sites. So you had Twitter get rid of President Trump, and then you, the Minister Farrakhan was also a person that they had took off of Facebook for a while. I do find a lot of his posts on Facebook. I also post a lot of his sermons and his comments on in other social sites. So I make sure that I do that. But I'm going to read to you something just to kind of get a conversation going. And this is from one of the books I've been reading, Message to the Black Man in America. And this is by the late Minister Elijah Muhammad. And I'm going to go right to one of the chapters in the book that talks about a plan to destroy our race. And so I'm going to start reading there. And it reads, "The American so-called Negroes are gravely deceived by the slave master's teaching of God and the true religion of God. They do not know they are deceived and earnestly believe that they are right, regardless of how vile the white race may be. My poor people are mentally blind, deaf, and dumb, and full of fear. Now, blind because they do not see the light or truth after being shown it for over 30 years. Now, deaf because they will not hear the truth, Islam, that has come to them from Allah through the messenger myself. Now they are dumb because they will not see or open their ears or hearts after the light has shone clear for many years. You are full of fear that was instilled in you when you were babies." So Allah told. Now the fear was put in you by the white slave masters, through tortures, lynchings, burnings, rapings, and killings, and has caused you to be blind, deaf, and dumb. The fear of the white slave master has caused you to love them in a crazy kind of way. You dear people, are like a woman desperately in love with a man who does not love her. Therefore, the love is blind. Now, the man can beat, torture, ravage, humiliate, shame, and mock, but she will yet love him. And even when someone tries to tell her that this man is no good for her and certainly does not love her, she will yet love him and will become angered and defend such a man. Now, this is a very sad thing, but a very true picture of the so-called Negroes. They love their tormentors. And so reading this, and there's so much more that I've read, and I'm not done with this. I'm going to finish this book again. Touches me in a number of different ways, because I see a lot of things that go on in the community, in the mind of brothers and sisters, and when you look at the police beatings and all the things that go on, and you know, and I had mentioned something maybe 2.5-3 weeks ago when I on a program, and I said this, and I wasn't saying this to be mean and nasty, but I was just saying how strong the hatred is, and I talked about the massacre in Texas, and I talked about those young kids being slaughtered and those police being out there and not going in there. And I said, there's no way that shouldn't have went in there. And I said, but it was racism. I just came out and said it's racism. It's a bunch of Hispanic kids and they don't care like that for them. you know, and so later, a couple weeks later, somebody put a video out the other day, and so this is how many weeks later, almost 3 weeks later after that massacre, and the parents have to witness this, you know, and they blocked out the shooting, but they didn't block out the screams, you know, so you could still hear the screaming in the classroom. You saw the officers run by the classroom and then run back. You saw somebody even get some sanitizer, walk real casually and get some sanitizer, and then somebody else just kind of checking their phone. And, you know, when you're on a mission like that to save and rescue people, and I've been in those situations, you know, being a former law enforcement person, and none of that is going on, you know, and we're very intent and set on getting things done. And so the seriousness and in regards to everything that took place, it was a terrible thing to see. But again, because of the cameras that were in the building, and then we can go back years ago when we didn't have cameras and we would just take the word. We would just have to take the word of these people that they did everything that they could. But we see that that's not true. And so many times we see that that's not true. And the killings, there was a young man that was killed, shot over 90 times on a traffic stop. They indicated, the police said that he pulled a or he fired a round on him when he was in his car, and then he took off and ran. He took off and ran, later stopped, turned around, but when he turned around, some officers said that they think they saw him reaching for his waist or whatever, and so they decided to shoot. And they shot him over a dozen times in the face. And so, for one, I don't understand or see how a person could just kill a person like that, and then go home at night, you know, to your wife and kids or whatever and stuff. I mean, so these monstrous acts and these things that I read just a minute ago, you know, and this is, and the police, you know, they're not doing that to these white people that they seem to catch that kill people and so forth. We can talk about the guy in Buffalo, New York, that killed 10 people and injured several other people wounded, but he killed 10 black people, and it was purposeful. You know, he was a serial killer, and he was what you call a, mission orientated. I mean, he felt that he needed to get rid of a specific group of people, and this is what he was looking to do. I see my caller is trying to call in. I'm just going to text him the number that he needs to call. And, okay, so I should get on in a few minutes. But, so you had that happen. So I got my caller on the line. Let me open it up. Hey, brother, Shihan, how you doing?
How you doing, sir?
All right. I just saw you had just tried to call and stuff like that. I was just talking about the Texas massacre and what people saw the other day in regards to the actions of the police, you know, they should have did more, and I felt, and I always said that this was racist, but people aren't going to want to hear that. Now there's going to be some different discussions in regards to, you know, the tactics that they follow. But we wouldn't have this conversation if there wasn't a film or video on what took place.
Yes, sir.
Prior to, I had did an ancestral profile. I talked about the late Professor Moses Powell. Master Musa Muhammad was the name he was given from the Nation of Islam for his training and teaching with them. And I want to also talk about the Senukis people that are going to be from his lineage of teaching that are going to be up here near the end of the month, so we can shed some light on that. But also, I had read a little bit about the plan to destroy our race, and I was reading, and I had a conversation with you about it a little earlier. They talked about a lot of the trauma that we have from slavery that kind of keeps us from seeing what the truth really is in regards to why we still seem to have no love for us. And so I kind of brought that up when I talked about, you know, shooting the young man that we just had 90 times, and they shot him over 12 times in the face. He was unarmed. And so despite all these ugly things that keep happening and everything that we're going through, we still find people that want to just pray for our oppressors, hoping that one day things are going to change. And so I guess I want to get your thoughts on that, and I want to get your thoughts from the perspective that you are follow the teachings of the late Elijah Muhammad, Minister Elijah Muhammad, and also that of our current Minister Louis Farrakhan?
Yes, sir. Well, you said a lot. Which one you want me to start with? You mentioned.
Well, you know, I guess, you know, people put information out there that, you know, I titled the show, Why Should a Black Man Follow the Teachings of Elijah Muhammad? And because I've heard so many ugly things when people talk about Muslims, you know, when they talked about 9/11, they tell it was the Muslims that did this and stuff, and then they were attacking Muslims and so forth. I mean, we have a number of different types of people from different faiths that call themselves Muslims, and so I think there's a difference. But people, again, they kind of target people, and I guess I was going to ask you if you could shed some light on maybe some of the differences and why you are in the faith that you are in.
Okay, well, first I'd like to thank you for having me on the show. I'm honored by that. And also like to make it clear that I am a follower of Elijah Muhammad. I've believed in what he taught and grew to know what he taught to be the truth since 1973. I was an active member of the Nation of Islam, meaning when I say active, in the mosque in an area outside of Philly called Chester, Pennsylvania. And then when I relocated here to Milwaukee back in 85, I rejoined the mosque, mosque number 3. At that time, the minister was Minister Jerry Muhammad. May Allah forever be pleased with him. And I was an active member here in the middle 80s to the early 90s. And then Brother Minister Ahmed Muhammad, who became the minister, you know, I was still, you know, attending the mosque and so forth. I wasn't as active as I was prior. And then with Minister Wim, who's a great brother and minister here, when he first came here, I was blessed to have dinner with him, with Mr. Holt, Sensei Holt, Michael Holt. And so, you know, me being a believer in the teachings since 1973, at the age of 13, coming out of Philadelphia area, where Islam was, it was strong Islamic inclinations in Philadelphia, New York, New Jersey, and the northern part of the East Coast. I don't want to say that I'm someone that is a representative, because I'm not that. I'm just a believer, a strong believer, one who grew into knowing that which he taught to be the truth. And I can only share my experience of what, you know, how it was when I was in the mosque in Chester, Pennsylvania, as well as here in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Now, to answer the question in regards to or the statement, why should people follow that which Sayyid Abdulaziz Muhammad taught, is because, you judge a tree by the fruit it bears. You judge a man by his works. Sayyid Abdulaziz Muhammad's works, was a true manifestation of that he had to been given a special type of teaching from a special type of teacher and able to accomplish the things that he did over a 44-year period. There's no one in America or during our time that have been able to do what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has done, particularly with black people.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at the accomplishments as far as economically, if you look at the accomplishments of how he was able to take a dead people, mentally dead, right, and give them life, light, and power, where they became a productive people. You know, that speaks volumes in itself. You know, no other black leader, no other black organization has been able to do what Abdulaziz Muhammad has done with black people. He stood us up and made a foolish people wise.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, when you say that, it makes me think about back in the 60s, you know, when they dropped all these drugs in our community, specifically to get us hooked on these different drugs and so forth. And that happened. You had the women that were in the prostitution, the men that were into drugs from drinking and other things. So there was a number of ways that they had control over us where we didn't know ourselves and so many different levels and stuff like that. And they created a program where they took us off the streets and cleaned us up. And they also did that for the people that were in prison. You know,
you're talking about
the
program of Honorable Elijah Muhammad, correct?
Yes.
Yes, sir. See, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he didn't have his followers go to methadone clinics to clean them up from the drug use of heroin or heroin, as they call it, cocaine and mescaline and meth or what have you. He didn't have his followers go to any rehabilitation clinics and so forth or rehab clinics. He cleaned them up with the word of God. And also, the dietary played a key part. You know, when he implemented that we would eat one meal a day with nothing in between, fast 3 days out the month, consuming only that which was good food, taking us away from eating the hog flesh, those things played a great part in our cleaning up and detoxifying our body from the drugs, the alcohol, and so forth. He took prostitutes to women that were prostitutes and cleaned them up. And let me say this. This is a question. I asked you, I say, who was it that opened the blind's eye, made the deaf hear, and the lame walk, and fed the multitudes with fish and bread? What would your answer be?
I would say the Christ.
That's the question. Your answer would be what?
Jesus Christ.
And this question is to you and the listening audience. Yes, you would say Jesus Christ. I would say no. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Because he made the blind man see. He made the deaf hear. And he made the lame walk. And he gave us the H&G whiting fish and the your bread, the staff of life to eat. He changed the dietary of the black man and woman in America. The black man was blind to the knowledge of self. His ear was deaf to hear the truth. And we was a lame people. We were not productive. He stood us up. and made us become a productive people. So I would say it was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He was the Jesus that we know.
Right.
Are you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You judge a tree by its fruit. You judge a man by his work.
Hold up 1 second. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what's happened here.
The enemy is invading the truth. It's all just that technical difficulty.
Yeah, I'm back. There was some, some little interference or something like that. But yeah, we're
not surprised. I'm not surprised.
So, with I had mentioned something earlier about guns, you know, in regards to protection, you know, with everything that's going on, you know, the homicide rate is so high in the city of Milwaukee and basically all over the world. We have a lot of mass shootings, but more so in the United States than anywhere else. And most people think about self-defense and taking care of themselves by using weapons and so forth. And I would think that a people in regards to the faith of the Muslims, in regards to the Nation of Islam and through the Islam, guns is not something that you guys look at in regards to your personal safety and protecting each other. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, first of all, let's address the fact that, you know, the whole world is armed with some type of firearm, guns,
okay,
grenade launchers, missiles, atomic weapons. We live in a time where the scripture speaks about the war of Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is definitely armed. You know, and I had to have a gun is like, in our community, is like a rite of passage. You know,
right,
a lot of these young brothers, you know, are heavily armed with 9mm and Glock, Mac-10s or what have you, you know, and this seems to be the norm. The Nation of Islam, when I was a young man, soldier in my, you know, we were instructed, and it's still the instruction today, we were instructed not to carry an arm. Not even as much as a penknife, because we believe that Allah will protect us. Not being spooky, because we don't believe in a mystery God. But, you know, the body is actually a weapon if it's properly trained. Now, I'm not saying, you know, to go to a gunfight with a bow and arrow or a spear.
Right.
You know what I mean? In drastic times, you need drastic techniques. So we're not going to be spooky with that. You know, if my assailant has a firearm, you know, and if I'm blessed to get it from him, of course I'm gonna utilize it. If my assailant has a firearm, I would prefer to have one. You know, I want to make it an even playing field.
Right.
You know, because really none of us, no matter how much we train in whatever art we train in, you know, if someone has a weapon, it puts you at a disadvantage.
Yes, yes. But the belief, I mean, to walk for, I mean, that takes a lot for a man to lay down his weapon, to follow a faith that says, even though we live in a world of people that don't have that respect, don't have that love and concern for each other, but yet we... we can protect ourselves, but we just choose not to use that firearm. And, you know, is that a, you know, that always been? When did that come up? I mean, because we've had firearms forever. So when you talk about
it. Well, that's always been a part of it. I'm sorry. That's always been a part of the teaching of the Nation of Islam. You never carried a firearm. They were never. We were never instructed from the Messenger, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to carry a firearm, a knife, or as much as a pen knife. You know, you know, we believe Allah would protect us, and that has always been the teaching and the belief in the Nation of Islam. The Muslims were. Had never been accused of carrying a firearm to protect themselves.
Right.
You know, even though, you know, Muslims were attacked during the earlier days and still are being attacked. But, you know, Allah suffices. He's sufficient. And if someone pulls a gun on a Muslim or a knife or whatever weapon they're using, and, you know, we pray Allah that we bless them, you know, to take the weapon, then, you know, that pool's right there in itself that Allah, you know, was with it. But it's male or female.
Mm.
See, a lot, there were many Muslims in the Nation of Islam that became students of the martial arts. You know, because, of course, like I said, we were instructed not to carry a weapon. But there were many that became proficient in self-defense. And a lot of the believers were instructed, especially the brothers, in some form of self-defense. And others chose to take it a little further by becoming students of the martial arts or jiu-jitsu, karate, or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Moses Powell, who was one of the greatest martial artists that ever lived, you know, He was one of the, I'm going to use the word, premier people in the nation that excelled in the art. And then, you know, he produced students that excelled in the art as well.
Wow. Now,
Dr. Powell was one of the great martial artists in the Nation of Islam. We had Dr. Moses Powell. We had Grandmaster Steve Sanders, who's known today as Grandmaster Steve Muhammad or Siju Muhammad.
Right.
We have, of course, my teacher, who is a student of Dr. Moses Powell, Grandmaster Anthony Muhammad. We got Siju Abdul Mataka Bear. We got Brother Sylvia Khalid, who I believe was a member of Nation Islam at one time. You know, we have many Muslims in that are martial arts senseis and shihans, professors and grandmasters. In different arts, not just in jiu-jitsu, but in different arts.
You know, I wanted to, and I'm not trying to change the subject a whole lot, but I did want to bring up something Brother Sean Muhammad had did a post on Facebook, and he went live, and that's something that he rarely does, but he did that because of the you know, his heart was burdened so much from Minister William Muhammad, you know, that he's in the hospital, and he indicated that, you know, he's going through an illness. He didn't specify specifically other than just saying cancer that he's dealing with, and that he's going to be going through some surgery or went through it already. And he had mentioned that. And so I'm trying to look up because he had also wanted people to, you know, just show him some love because, you know, Minister William Muhammad, I mean, I've met him many a times, but I didn't know him, but I would just see him in places and spaces where trauma was affecting people throughout the city, where somebody either got shot, were being wrongly accused of something and they needed some legal or financial help or whatever help mm-hmm. that they may have needed, he was there. And, you know, okay. and there was a lot of us brothers that was there, but he was a very powerful presence, and he continued doing those type of things. So I really understand and feel to see the emotions why you would be behind some brother like that is doing nothing but good for the people. So I'm just trying to find his I thought I wrote it down somewhere, but I'll look for it a little later and bring it up and see if we can just give him our prayers and hope that he gets better soon. But I will find that Cash App and look that up real quick and try and.
I'm not sure, but I believe, if I remember correctly, it's Hashad 19, I believe.
Yeah, I heard it say that, Hashad 19.
I think it was Hashad 19. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I believe that's what it is.
I'm
basing on the post that Brother Sean had
mm-hmm.
posted, which I saw as well as you did, and he let everybody, he informed everybody of the minister's health situation, which I pray a lot
mm-hmm.
that, you know, he heals and he has a full recovery. He's definitely a great brother in our community, and
yeah.
I've known him for at least 30 years. Because, like I said, I remember when he first came here, and I was blessed to have dinner with the brother. And I got to know him, and last time I saw him was at the Hill to Hood event. Was that a month ago or so? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's good spirits, and he's just, you know, good brother Minister Will. You know what I mean? It's sad that I hear that my brother Bill, though. Very sad.
Mm-hmm.
I hope people would, you know, pray for our brother and, you know, also help with the economic situation, which, you know, as far as the Cash App and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give, like Brother Dad said, you know, give our brother flowers while he lives.
Yes, yes, exactly, most definitely. And so, I just wanted to mention that. And so that was... Cash App Hashad
19.
Yeah, Hashad 19. Yes. I remember him saying that. So, yeah, so just show him some love. And like I said, you want to give somebody flowers and stuff while they're here, you know.
Right.
You know, and that's what we're talking about, because it's just, I mean, it's just so much work and so much trauma that we're dealing with on a daily basis. And you got these warriors, like Minister Shah Muhammad and Minister William Muhammad, just out there doing the work, and just a lot of us just not doing. And despite,
okay.
you know, what they're going through and, you know, and they're not being paid to do any of this, they're just out in the community, you know,
okay.
Trying to give people some hope and help. You know, putting their feet on the ground and like boots on the ground doing the work, you know. So that's big. And I just want to give them all the praise and honor for that. So I hope to we can get somebody to reach out to him in that way. So and I also made some calls to some people out of town, I know, just to let them know and stuff. To let them know. So, and I also talked to Doc Rogers earlier today to let him know. There's a lot of people that didn't know, but like I said, we want to stay in touch with our brothers and stuff like that. But we're at the top of the hour. I'm going to play a song, and when we come back, we're going to, you know, the line will be open for calls and for questions, comments, or, you know, you just continue to listen. But we're going to also talk about, you know, a tournament. Or do you have, like, the information in regards to on the tournament that's coming up at the end of the month?
Yes, sir. It's actually a seminar. Well, no, it's actually
okay.
The Nation of Islam's National Training. which will be here at the Wisconsin Center, July the 28th through the 31st. The 30th is a martial arts seminar, which is open to everybody in the martial arts or not in the martial arts. It's a self-defense seminar, and this is hosted every year for the past, I believe, 26 years. This is the first time it's going to be done here in Milwaukee at the Wisconsin Center. The first time it's going to be done here, Nation Islam National Training. Usually Grandmaster Anthony does it every year in Chicago. But we get an opportunity to have it here, which is going to be very epic for those who are in the martial arts or those who may not be martial arts students. That will definitely be the place to be between the 28th and the 31st, for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, we will be back in a moment. Play a little song here. And, well, not a song, just a little speech real quick, and then we'll
I know you're asking today, how long will it take? Somebody's asking, how long will prejudice blind the visions of men? I come to say to you this afternoon, however difficult the moment,
yes, sir,
however frustrating the hour, it will not be long, because truth crushed the earth will rise again.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
Yes, sir.
Because no lie can live forever.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
Because you shall reap what you sow.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne.
Yes,
that scaffold sways the future.
Yes,
behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. How long? Not long. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Yes,
how long?
Not long.
Because mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Yes,
he's trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. He's loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword.
Yes,
his truth is marching on.
Yes,
he has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat.
Peace,
he is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on. Glory, hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kress. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
We are back. So we have on the line tonight with us, we have Sihan Andre Muhammad, good brother, martial arts instructor, brother that also is a follower of the faith of Minister Elijah Muhammad, and also indicated that in the teachings of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. And so we're having that discussion as to why should the black man follow the teachings of Elijah Muhammad. I had mentioned something earlier I had read or talked about, you know, the drug program where they clean people up from drugs and all their type of addictions, but they use no drugs to do that. They had a very high success rate. They also cleaned up, you know, a lot of the situations, the people that were incarcerated. They had programs for brothers that were incarcerated and so forth. And so they did a lot of good work. And then when you talk about people with all the violence going on and stuff like that, you're not reading about people of that background that are creating a lot of the problems in society. But yet we have a prejudice towards them when people talk about Muslims, and we have all different types of people that go under the name of Muslims. And so there's a difference. And so we're trying to elaborate on some of that. But at the same time, you know, we had also talked about, you know, how they protect themselves. And they do this in a manner in which they uplift each other with their own confidence in themselves, how to handle themselves, and so each one teach one, and you know, and that was part of what the late Dr. Moses Powell, you know, Musa Muhammad, that was teaching the Nation of Islam martial arts. He was an instructor for them. He's also an instructor. He was the first black African male person to teach the FBI and the DEA. And so, and you have to understand, back in that day, black people were not embraced in that manner and stuff. So he had to be a special person. And when they talk about him doing that one finger roll, you know, just looking at him, I don't know. I never met him, but I would think he was at least 250 pounds. Very muscular man, very athletic. You know, he was a good boxer and so forth and this and that. A lot of his disciples are still around from, that follow his teaching. And we have someone that's going to be here near the end of the month. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, give people an opportunity to show up there and, you know, and get some tickets and get involved. And you don't have to be a martial artist. It's just something that's going to enhance your ability to protect yourself, understand what you should do and shouldn't do in situations, that's going to help you. And so we live in a world where we got so much conflict and trauma that's going on right now. So if somebody can shed something on you that's going to help you survive from one moment to the next, it's a good thing. And I've been involved in some of these situations and seminars, and I'm most definitely am looking forward to going to this one and also participating in it as well. So I'm looking forward to that. Sihan, you still with me?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
So this
I saw some of what was on the tournament, and like you said, it's a seminar. They also talk about teaching you how to protect yourself. They even bodyguard workers teaching people how to be security personnel and so forth. I mean, I think that's important when we talk about an incident that just happened in Milwaukee at one of the stores where a young man was a security guard that was escorting a person out of the store. And as he escorted that person, that person then pulled a gun, shot that person, and then another security person happened to be there, and then he shot that person, shot the shooter. So two people lost their lives today, I mean, that day, and that was just a couple, that was about a week ago, you know. So, I you know, I was looking at the, listening to the news earlier today, and there was two young ladies that were killed in Milwaukee, and they believe it was some type of domestic, and they believe the boyfriend, it was a mother and daughter, and they were both shot, and they believe the shooter was the boyfriend of the mother. But, I mean, so we got so much gun violence going on here. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I believe I saw that on the news today. I think somebody was a 19-year-old or 40-something-year-old.
Right.
Yeah, and then I think the security guard tragedy, I think, was that at El Rey's? Yes, sir. Sad. I mean, a lot of gun violence. I mean, you know, I was talking with a good friend of mine who you know yesterday, and we came in contact with these young brothers, I believe they're supposed to be the Kia Boys or what have you. And it's like six or seven of them, man. They all had guns on their waist with extended clips and masked up. And not that a situation was about to arise, but, you know, we were preparing ourselves to defuse the situation if it was. And it's sad, man, because, you know, like we are students of the martial arts, from you and I. And, you know, there's really nothing that you can prepare yourself for, no matter how much you're in a dojo, how much you're in a ring, you know, and you go through a certain scenario and, well, if this happened, I do this or this block or this wrist lock and throw or this kick. But in reality, there's nothing that can really train you for a real life death situation, because there's no set pattern on when an actual attack or an actual occurrence or somebody accosting you is going to happen or occur. You don't have nothing really to go on based on. You got to handle the situation as it arises, man. You got to adapt.
Right.
You know, you start in martial arts, you do a certain punch, shaking punch, temple punch, a certain kick, front kick, side kick, roundhouse, what have you, right? And that plays out pretty well in the dojo. But when you're in the street, depending on the weather conditions, depending on the atmosphere, depend on, you know, how much room you have to utilize, you know, all that plays a part, you know, and the first part of all war is psychological. That's the first part. We have to beat that part first in order to get to the actual combat, if you understand what I'm saying. If a person comes in a store, or like that situation that took place in New York, right, where the young man came in there and shot and killed all those people, right?
Right.
Someone's coming in shooting. Somebody's come in shooting. Not where they got the gun on you, you know, you can possibly do this and that. I'm talking about they coming in shooting. What training do you have to gear up for that?
Right.
You're going to have to work according to what's available. You're going to have to adapt to the reality of the condition. And a lot of things I've learned by being a student of Grandmaster Anthony Muhammad through the years, he strongly teaches on the psychological part of the fight.
Right.
The assailant's intent. and what level you should go to when that occurs.
Right.
So we train for tournaments and to get the little man on the trophy with the raggedy sidekick. You know, we
right.
train for that. You know, we don't train for actual combat. And see, just giving a little history, my history. My first martial arts instructor was my father. And he was a Marine, and he was in the reconnaissance unit, right? And he also trained FBI agents at Quantico Marine Base Judo. And then it was, at that time it was called combat judo, right?
Right.
And he would share with me when I first wanted to take up karate, right? He took me around to various schools in the city, and he would share with me that, you know, this is not what he's familiar with, because he was on a real battlefield, real life and death situations. And he,
right.
you know, he said, I don't know about no belt, no belt, right? You know, he was fighting to survive. And what he learned in terms of the martial arts, the judo or combat judo, was, you know, gouge, rip, tear, slash, you know, those type of techniques. When we come across something like that in a real life death situation, it won't be a belt situation mentioned.
Right.
Your assailant won't ask you what's your rank before he pulls a gun on you. Or if they plan on robbing you, or you're being jumped by multiple assailants, they're not going to ask you your rank. They're not going to ask you the dojo you go to. They're not going to see how good your kata is. You know, you're going to have to function according to the attack. And as there's a saying, and I've said it on Facebook, you can't be a black belt in the dojo and a white belt in the street. Because in the street is where it really counts. Your rank is only important in a dojo or in a tournament or at a seminar. In the street, there is no rank. He who wants it the most will be the one who wins or survives the fight. It won't be belt based on your belt rank. And I thought I would share that with you.
Well, you know, the tournament that's going to be here, there's a number of different classes. You don't have a lot of the information that they have.
Well, from my understanding, and I'm basing on the flyer that was posted, and I posted it on my page. I did talk to Grandmaster Anthony the other day in regards to that the tournament. The tournament is going to be held on Sunday. And I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's going to be more like a self-defense tournament.
Okay.
Situation defense tournament. Who demonstrates the best, most practical technique? Now, I first was under with the understanding that it would be katas, forms, and sparring.
Okay.
You know, and I actually asked Grandmaster Anthony Muhammad, I said, Abdul Aziz Muhammad today, I said,
right.
Are they going to have an old man's division for me? And he laughed. He said, yes, they're going to. He said, yes, they're going to have an old man's division for us. So, you know, because I was planning on participating in the sparring. So,
okay.
But then, after I talked to another brother, and he wasn't sure, but it may be more or less a self-defense tournament. I'm accurate in that statement. Then again, I do wish that it possibly be some sparring involved, because I would want to participate in that.
Right, right.
We're going to have workshops for security. We're going to have workshops for security and so forth. A woman's self-defense class, children's self-defense class. And for the record, because you did mention about them talking about or sharing information on security, Grandmaster Anthony had a security company called X-Man Security, and he secured actors, Denzel Washington and Wesley Snipes and He did security for various movies, Do the Right Thing, and so forth and so on. Those movies, was that the 80s, early 90s? So his,
right.
And of course, you know, he's security for, he teaches all the FOI throughout the country.
Right.
He's the assistant supreme captain of Nation Islam. And he
well, you know,
all
you know thinking about that, you know, Grandmaster Moses Powell, you know, he also did bodyguard work and worked with Wesley Snipes. I read that in his bio. So it's something that it's a continuation of people in the Sanukis family. And Sanukis, that means survival?
The doc says Sanukis means simplicity and survival.
Mm-hmm.
He said it means simplicity and survival.
Man, minimum force, maximum results.
Right. And from my understanding, you know, the doc was, he was a student of Grand Professor Ferrando Visitacion, Professor V, for short.
Right.
And then he, you know, created his own system, Sanukis. Soki Littlejohn, one of the greats in the system, he was a great competitor. Matter of fact, he had his fight on Wild World of Sports back in 74, I think it was, 75, when he fought Mufin Dishitelli Fasel. It was Kung Fu versus Karate. And that's listed today as one of the best or the best point sparring match in the history of point fighting or point karate.
Hey, hold on a second. I think I have a caller on the line. At 4018, you have a question or comment? Or are you just listening? 4018, question or comment, or just listening?
Just listening, brother.
Okay,
yes,
all right, appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. All right, so... We talked about the you know, the self defense that they're putting on, but at the same time, that is something that you talked earlier and stuff. That's part of the training for the brothers and sisters that are in the Nation of Islam. Am I saying that right? Fruit of Islam.
The fruit of Islam is the men.
Okay.
It is the military training of the men who practice Islam in North America. That's what that means, FOI, through Islam. The women also get particular training. I don't know what all training they get, because that's the woman's class. I'm only acknowledging more concerned with the men's class. But and then, you know, children learn, you know, self-defense. I remember one time in a lecture, I think it was Minister Farrakhan, stated that even teach the baby how to throw the bottle. We in war. You know, so everybody got to learn some form of self-defense. And see, a lot of times when we speak of self-defense, we think of someone aggressing us and then we respond to that aggression, right? Sometimes self-defense has to also be self-offense. We have to do the attack in order to defend.
Right, most definitely.
That's a misconception in the martial arts. You know, we think, okay, if you throw a particular punch, I'm going to do this particular block, and then I'm going to respond with this particular punch and this particular kick. No. Aggression, we taught never to be the aggressor. But if we attack, we fight with those who fight with us, right? So if we think aggression is just always physical, then we're mistaken, because you could end up being a fatality of war, because you're not responding at the time that you should respond. See, I often, sometimes in my classes I teach, if you move when you're not supposed to move, it can cost you your life.
Right.
And if you don't move when you're supposed to move, it can cost you your life. Don't always think of, I'm being attacked and then I'm going to defend. Sometimes you have to attack in order to survive.
Oh, exactly. Most definitely. Most definitely.
You know?
Because
aggression not necessarily physical. Aggression can also be verbal, which most cases it is. A lot of times when a person is going to attack you, they like to have words to build themselves up so they can attack you. And if you are able to pick up on in a conversation that this probably can go to the next level, then you need to attack.
Yeah.
So that you
can survive. I most definitely wanted to touch on a little bit of that just because we have that seminar coming up at the end of the month. That's going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then you said Sunday is going to be
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Oh,
but
part
is called it's the Saturday portion is open to the general public that I know. That's martial artists of all rank systems. Sunday's the tournament. The Thursday and the Friday I can't speak on because it is the Nation of Islam National Training. Now, they also going to have particular workshops. I think survival workshops, doing disaster workshops and other different workshops. I mean, this is something that they do annually. So I can't speak on Thursday and Friday, but I can speak on Saturday and Sunday.
And I have a question for you in regards to what brought you to your relationship, or why did you go with Christianity or Jehovah's Witness? What led you to, FOI?
Well, your question is asking me what made me follow the teaching of Allah Muhammad and believe in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
That's your question, correct?
Yes.
Like I said, I was born and raised in an area called Chester, Pennsylvania, which is outside of Philly. The distance, like, would be Milwaukee to Oak Creek. Okay?
Okay.
So, which is actually, like, on the other side of the airport, right? Same distance like that in Chester, Pennsylvania. It's on the other side of Philadelphia Airport. And being born and raised in that city, that area, Philly, New York, New Jersey, a strong Islamic inclination, very strong. I was 13 years old, 1973. I'm 62 today. Okay. Really due to Allah. In 1973, I accepted the teaching of Allah Muhammad. And what I mean by that is I got knowledge of self. I started studying his teaching. Actually, I'm going to have to say I was younger than that, but I really started studying his teaching at the age of 13. There was an older gentleman named Brother James 6X, D. Johnnet, who passed me a lot as he pleases. He was very instrumental in a lot of us learning Islam. And in the elementary school that I went attended was right next door to his candy store. And every day we were going to the candy store, little children going to the candy store, school right next to the store. He would teach us the greetings of assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum salam, meaning peace be unto you, unto you peace as well. And if he gave the greeting and you knew the return greeting, you give a free piece of candy or some cookies. You see what I'm saying? So we all learned, the greetings at that age. And then there was brothers that were older than me in the community that had accepted the teaching of Allah Muhammad back in the 70s. And, just to hear the brothers share the knowledge and, we see the transformation of the brothers from being what we call bad guys in the neighborhood to suit and tie and clean cut and, selling. At that time, the paper was called the Muhammad Street's newspaper, and which is Final Call today. And, like I said, coming up in that atmosphere and learning from those various brothers, I had cousins in my family that were Muslim. That I got knowledge from, and then one of my best friends who's like my brother, or is my brother, his older brother was very, very instrumental in a lot of the knowledge I learned. Brother Alvin had me a lot of further degrees with him. He taught me and his brother every day. I mean, we would sit at the kitchen table, man, and he would teach us for hours. You know, and I'm younger. You know, we getting, you know, getting this knowledge. So I have an interesting story. I was failing in my schoolwork in ninth grade. At that time, it was called junior high school, seventh, eighth, and ninth in junior high school, wasn't no middle school.
Right.
And I was in ninth grade. I was failing. My mother punished me for a month. So when you come home from school, you're going to go to your room, you're going to do your homework, study, you're going to eat your dinner, you're going to go back to study, you're going to go to bed. This was a whole month. I mean, she knew how to put the punishment on. But I thank Allah for her punishment. Because during the time of that month, I would be in my room reading Message to the Black Man. I'm looking at it right now. I got it in my hand right now.
Wow.
The original, it's a hard blue back copy. I got it in my hand right now when you speak. And it was one of the first copies. The first copies were a hard blue back cover.
Right.
And then they became a hard red back cover. Right? I got that book in my hand right now. And the pages, I mean, the book just falls apart because I've read it so much and it's at that kind of time. Right? So while in the bedroom, I'm studying Message Black Man. And that punishment to make me do better in school made me not only do better in school, but it made me get knowledge of myself and studying the message. And from that point on, before I say 1973, because I was in the ninth grade in 1973, right? I've been a student. I've been a follower. And I don't like to use the word follower. I am a follower in spirit, but, you know, when you follow someone, you follow to the letter of the law, everything they teach.
Right.
Not just some of the things. And so I'm saying that. That's why I want it to be clear that I'm not saying I'm a representative of the teachings of Ahmad Muhammad or the Nation of Islam. That's Minister Wynn here in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I am a follower, student, believer, one who grew into knowing that the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are 1,000+% right and exact.
Yes. Now, you said how you've made that improvement, and from the things that I've read, it talked about, you know, self-improvement and about knowing self and knowing the God in you and all of these different things. And I'm just saying there's a difference from that type of thinking from Christianity, because that's how I came up. Actually, I came up a number of different ways. I came up not even knowing that I was going to Jehovah's Witness. I didn't know that. But at the same time, when you think about everything that we went through, and I read something out of the book, Message to the Black Man, and I read in regards to I think it was page, I got my glasses on, 65, The Plan to Destroy Our Race. And I read some of the writings out of that. And we talked about how we just accept certain things and we blindfoldly follow things that that aren't even true. And we even know that they're not true. And even when you talk about some of the trauma that's been passed on to us from slavery, but yet we still will follow these people despite everything that they do. And this has been going on for so long. And the changes, you can just see that. I mean, there's no love for us from these people. And when I say people, these white people, and I'm not trying to be mean, you just have to call it for what it is. And that's the thing, you know, because when you talk about unifying, you know, there's not another group of people that they're always trying to divide other than the black man. And, but, you know, the Asians, you know, when they came here and stuff, they had their own schools, they had their own churches, and they kept their language. you know, and you can say the same for the Arabs and so many other people and stuff like that. But with us, you know, it's divide and conquer. Let's integrate with them. And one of the things that I had read that really moved me was that when you guys would have meetings, that even though, and I think I read that there were some white Muslims, but they weren't invited in those meetings. When the meetings, it was black people, it was just black people in the meetings. You know, and because because you have to keep what's with us, and not let other people that are, you know, that not are of us to be part of that. And that's not how we're operating today. And so when I look at all the trauma that keeps going on over and over again, at some point you got to start looking at other things. And, you know, what is the reluctance, you know, to follow or look, because I look at Louis Farrakhan, I think about a year or two, or maybe I got to go back some years ago, where they barred him from Facebook, you know, and, you know, they said because he was promoting hate and violence and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not reading any of that. I've listened to hundreds of his speeches and so forth, and I'm not hearing any of that, you know. So,
well,
your thoughts on that, and I think that's part of the psychological trauma, whereas we won't even look at certain things. And I'm just saying, you know, as a black man, you know, and as black people, we come together and we find something, and then they try to tear it down. He's like, hey, man, these guys are lying, and I can prove to you you're lying. Let's look at this. Look at the history. Let's look at this. And he's always laying that out. And what's the defiance? Because people don't want to give up on what they came up believing. And I actually kind of understand that, because there's some things that I'm still struggling with because that's how I came up, you know, under the Christian.
Let me say this. I'm going to address the last statement first.
Okay.
You mentioned where they took Minister Farrakhan down from social media, right?
Right.
I think that was last year, year before.
Right.
One thing, the enemy or the white man says, well, he does not say, he'll never say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad lied or he didn't
right.
teach the truth. He'll say, he's teaching hate.
Right.
He never said the messenger lied about whatever the messenger taught. He never said he was lying. He never said Minister Farrakhan lied.
Right.
He would say, oh, he's anti-Semitic. He's teaching hate. Now, of course, they're going to take him down from social media, because that's an avenue to get to many. Right?
Right.
And they want to They want to do like the scriptures say, they want to hide or keep the light hidden in the bushel basket. They don't want the people to get the truth. And social media is one of the fastest venues to get the truth to the people. Whether it's Minister Farrakhan or whether it's Professor James Smalls or the teaching or history that Dr. Ben Yosef Yakinen gave us and others. They would try to, as they say, cut it off at the pass. Didn't
right.
want the light to get to the people. And what the scriptures say, now earlier you were speaking about, page 65. In the Message of the Black Man, he's talking about plans to destroy our race. And
right.
I just haven't had this out underlined. I don't know when I did it. It had been years ago. It says, blind because they do not see the light of truth after
right.
being shown it. For over 30 years, at that time, over
right.
30 years. Death because they will not hear the truth. Islam
right.
that has come
right.
to them from Allah through the messenger, myself. They are deaf because they will not see or open their ears and hearts after the light has shone clear for many years. And I'm going to stop there. But Mm-hmm. That right there, in a nutshell, explains our condition. We're blind, deaf,
right.
and dumb. We fail to
yeah.
want to hear the truth, which I mentioned earlier. We fail to want to hear the truth. We fail to want to see the truth. And we fail to act on the truth. So, you know, just because a person, see, person say, well, I hear you. But are you listening?
Right,
because
right.
hearing is sound detected. You understand what I'm saying? And
mm-hmm.
and when you listen, that's interpreting the sound. So, you know, we're not listening. We hear it, but we're not listening.
Right.
We don't want
right.
to hear it. We don't want to listen. And see, now we're in a time which we call, this is called the information age. We're in a
mm-hmm.
technological, industrial technological slash now information age. Living
right.
in 2022 and you blind, deaf, and dumb, or you ignorant to the knowledge of God, devil, yourself,
mm-hmm.
then you choose to be in that condition.
Right.
Because
right,
the,
right.
the knowledge then came.
Right.
You know, if we, now you said you came up in Christianity and you came up like most of us here in this country.
Right.
Came up in the Christian faith because this is a Judeo-Christian society. You
right.
know, there are people like my children and others that came up in Islam. But some of us, my age group, I'm going to say probably more so baby boomers, they have came up in the Christian faith. Religion was passed on. I'm not attacking no Christian. That's not
right.
what I'm doing.
Right.
But let me be clear on that. Don't have nobody call in and say, well, you know, try to do a debate or compare Christian and Islam. That's not what I'm doing. I'm giving
right.
the actual facts of the history. Our people have been taught to believe as they believe in the Christian religion. Now, that goes back to my parent, my grandparent, my great-grandparent,
right.
my great-great-grandparent, all the way back to slavery, all the way back to our sojourn here coming to these shores of America, right? Now, it's interesting. You mentioned that you were in the Jehovah's Witness set,
right.
so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that, and as a matter of fact, if you ask most people that are the Jehovah's Witness set, and I'm talking about mainly black, and you ask
right.
them, who was the founder of the Jehovah's Witness set? Do you know they couldn't tell you?
Mm.
You said, oh, do you know? And I'm not putting you on the spot.
No, I I don't know.
Okay.
And like
okay.
I said,
now,
yeah.
now, there was two men, Judge Rutherford and Pastor Russell, right?
Okay.
Or another way around, Pastor Russell, Judge Rutherford, right?
Okay.
Those men were the ones that started the Jehovah's Witness set, right? And it's been in conversation and mentioned one or if not both had met with Master Farad Muhammad, the one who taught the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Mm.
And they started what's called the Jehovah's Witness. That means they witness God, right? That's what
okay,
Jehovah
yeah.
means. Jehovah's Witness means Jehovah's Witness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you study some of their literature, and some of their practices, the women dressed in a very chaste or modest way, right? Their dresses are
right.
on their knees. They don't believe in practicing Christianity. Christmas, right?
Right.
Easter. They don't deal with what was called the pagan holidays,
right?
Right,
right.
They also taught and believed that the world ended or would end in the year 1914.
Right, 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 right.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm saying that to say a lot of things that were given to us, we don't even understand the history or the origin of it. You know, if you ask most people that practice the religion or believe in the religion of Christianity, they say, well, who were we before we came to the shores of America? Some of
right.
our ignorant would say, well, that's not important. No, it's very important. Because what did we practice and believe before we came to the shores of America?
Right,
we can't say Christianity, but we were not Christians.
Exactly.
You can't say that.
Exactly.
Most of the blacks, the Africans that were captured in West Africa along the Ivory Coast and those particular geographical areas or countries, right? Their religion was either Islam or Yoruba, or what some may call Ife.
Yeah.
Right? They were not Christians. You know, I often think about the movie, the original movie Roots. When I was in high school, when I was a teenager, it came out every week for a couple, 2 or 3 weeks. And as I was in a black, they called it Black Studies class, right?
Okay.
And part of the homework was to watch that documentary or movie. And of course, you know, what's his name? LeVar Burton played Kunta Kinte.
Right, right.
If you remember the movie, Kunta Kinte went to Chicken George. That was Lou Gossett Jr. that played that part. He went to Chicken George, and he said, what is this about this Jesus that all these women get all riled up about him? And everybody, you know, I'm paraphrasing, going in a hoopla over. He said, well, that's this little baby Jesus, and that's who we celebrate this time of year, and don't ask no questions because you're trying to start some trouble. Right? And that was it. Don't ask no questions, trying to start trouble. All cool they trying to figure out is, well, who is this Jesus they all talking about? Which means he had no knowledge of no Jesus when he was in Africa.
Right.
Because Christianity was not the religion. It wasn't practiced. And then some of our ignorance say, well, that was Alex Haley's roots. No, that was our roots. That was every black man and woman child's roots in this country. We did not practice Christianity. Some say, to try to defend and say, well, we were Christians when we were in Egypt. We were Coptics. The Coptic Christians, and the symbol of Ankh is a cross, or the cross came from the Ankh symbol, which is symbolized in Kia light. Right? Okay, I can accept that. The Ankh preceded the cross. But the fact is, the religion, especially the religion of Christianity that was given to us from our slave master, was never practiced by black people in Africa.
Right.
Never. And if you ask them, you say, well, here's my question, and it's not attack on Christianity.
Right.
Well, you had mentioned earlier that by you reading this to the black man, it's mentioned that, well, you don't believe in Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some say when you practice Islam, oh, y'all don't believe in God. Well, where does that come from? Who said that?
Right.
The white man never even said that. You blacks follow Elijah Muhammad, except it's lying, I don't believe in God. That's black people saying that because they don't have an understanding. You don't believe in Jesus. Well, no, not believing in Jesus that he came, that he lived 2,000 years ago and he's still present today and that he was the Son of God. No, I don't believe that. Because that's not true. Now, some Christians may feel offended.
Right.
There's no proof to show that that man you called Jesus 2,000 years ago was the Son of God. Because if you say Jesus 2,000 years ago was the Son of God, then what was Moses? What was Lot? What was David? What was Solomon? I do better than that. What was Adam?
Right.
If anybody was the Son of God, it had been Adam, because he was considered what they called the first.
Right.
So you're going to tell me from Genesis to Matthews, all those men or prophets who have were not the Son of God? The guy waited 4,000 years later and said, oh, this is my son? No. But there's a scripture in the Old Testament, I believe in Genesis or Leviticus. I'm sorry, Exodus, which says that Adam was the Son of God. Then it said that in a part of the Bible, it said David was the Son of God. So, I mean, we got to understand what we're being taught.
Right.
You know, and
right.
I asked the question. I said, well, and like I said, I'm not on attack. But I asked, okay, what makes Jesus any different than any prophet in the Bible? He said, well, he was the Son of God. I said, but what makes him different than any other prophet in the Bible? Okay, well, he was born of a virgin birth. It's okay. What else? Oh, he was crucified and resurrected. Okay. That's it? So, yeah. It's okay. Well, here you go. There's a book called The World's 16 Crucified Saviors. Jesus was the 16th crucified savior that came to the world. There was 15 right. other crucified saviors that came to the world, all had a virgin birth, all were crucified, and all were supposed to have been resurrected. Jesus was the 16th one. And some were called the Lamb of God. Oh, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, instead of picking Jesus as your Savior or saying the Son of God, why not pick Krishna or Hindu or Thammuz or Mithra or Bali or one of those deities who preceded Jesus by some by 1,200 years? See, we just go by what was told to us by someone that sits in a pulpit and tells us that he or she was ordained by God to teach
right.
this particular
right.
doctrine.
Well, you know, I tell you, we really are going to have to kind of revisit this a number of different ways, and I'm sure we'll have a number of different people to, you know, just kind of talk and speak on this, because I'm still reading and trying to, you know, understand some different things. There's some things I can go with, and there's some things that I don't go with from reading some of the out of the book, Message to the Black Man. But one of the things that I really, you know, it empowers me. It's a very powerful book. And so I can see, and, you know, like during the time that book was written, you know, when, you know, we didn't have video cameras of the things that were going on and stuff, and the brutality, mm-hmm. I won't say that it was worse, but, you know, it was a constant that was just there. You know, the rules of the land, the Jim Crow laws were just so enacted viciously and stuff on us. And, I mean, we got the same thing going on now, but people just don't are blind to see it. And so, you know, when you talk about some of these things, so this is why I say, you know, why I can understand why a lot of black people would follow in the teachings of, you know, Minister Farrakhan or Minister Elijah Muhammad. And so I get that. But, you know, I am troubled, you know, from what, you know, a lot of the things that I don't know, and I'm just going to have to do some more research and just read more about, you know, where we came from and what was our spirituality like. And I've read some different things and got some different thoughts and so forth. And but like I said, I'll speak more on that as I, you know, gain some more knowledge and where I feel comfortable to, you know, support all these different things, because like right now, it's troubling for me in a lot of different ways and stuff like that, because, you know, I mean, I can see some pluses and some minuses and stuff, but, you know, like as far as the torment that's consistently going on, and one of the things that, you know, the comments, like you said earlier, you know, one of the things that the white man always talked about, Minister Louis Farrakhan, one thing that they don't call him a liar. And
can't say lie about anything.
Yeah, you know, and so that in itself, because from, you know, and this is what draws me in to the reading, because, you know, I'm not catching these different lies. There's some different things that, concepts that I might not take or believe in, but, in regards to a lot of the things that are being talked about, how we've been treated and how we internalize our own trauma and still support these people. Like we're like that battered woman that has that abusive man that doesn't want to be with her, but she's going to take that abuse and this and that and defend him, you know. Just like that the cop that killed the girl's brother, that Amber Geiger, that killed that cop's brother, and then she gave him and when the brother of the cop of the brother that was killed asked the judge if he could hug her, hug the girl. Killed his husband.
Down in Georgia somewhere else.
And then the judge comes down. Yeah. But I'm just saying, that type of mental trauma right there, where we forgive our oppressors, and that's just eating me up. And I see that so much. And so when I look at a lot of the Christianity, this is what I hear them talking about all the time. And we're going to reap our promised land when we die. And they'll get punished later on and stuff, but right now they can have all this and that right now and stuff like that. So I'm just looking into some things and stuff like that. So we're near the end of the show. Any closing thoughts before we get off the line?
I appreciate you allowing me this time to come on and share what I've learned. One, as a student of the martial arts, that aspect of the show, and also to share with you some of the things I've learned as being a Muslim believer and follower of the Most Honorable Allah.
All right. Well, look, I appreciate you coming on here, Shian Andre Muhammad. I appreciate it. Love you. And look forward to hooking up with you again. We got to do some training. And actually, I got to get my work in tonight before I crash out. I want to thank my listeners again for questions and comments or any suggestions. You can reach me on warriorswave101@gmail.com. That's warriorswave101@gmail.com. And we will be back next Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Central Time. All right. Thank you for joining us, Warriors Way.
Peace.
Where is she?
Come on back, peaceful.
Whoa. Easy now.
I'm going to be free or die.
I've been walking with my face turned to the sun. Weight on my shoulders, a bullet in my gun. Oh, I got eyes in the back of my head, just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can while I can for my people. While the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night, that's when I'm